It's time for the Nebraska Men's Basketball Coaches Show.
Dix posing with it, trapped. Is he going to call timeout? Let's take it away. He just took that out of his hands. Here's Sam. Here's Frager. Frager over to Hoiberg in the left corner. Starts down the baseline. Puts it up and in and one. Holy smokes. What a sequence. The takeaway on the defensive end. And the finish on the offensive end by Sam.
Brody, Winter, driving, shot blocked by Buchengel, retrieved by Mass, down the floor, Jamarcus pushes the ball, crossover, kick out, Sanford three ball, no good, offensive rebound, Mass with the putback. What a sequence, what a sequence. 56 to 39, 17 points the lead.
Buchengel, guarded by Davis, hands it off. Price has got it, reverses left side, Jacobson. He jab steps, he drives, he kicks. Now Hoiberg driving, kicking, right corner, Price.
Put it up and down. Holy smokes, times a zillion. 27 to 14, Price Sanford is putting on a clinic.
Now, here's your host, Kyle Crooks, on the Huskers Radio Network.
Welcome in, Nebraska Basketball Show here tonight. Why not talk some Nebraska hoops? It's the hottest team, I think, in the country right now. I'm Kyle Crooks, joined by assistant coach Nate Lenzer. Coach, it is outstanding to see you and get a chance to chat with you for the first time here in person. Welcome. This is your first time in these brand new studios. But for you, there's a lot to talk about. 11-0, freshly off a tremendous buzzer-beating win on the road in the Big Ten road opener at Illinois. There's a lot of good things to talk about. How are you?
Doing good. Yeah, it's always good to come over and talk about these guys and talk about our programs. So excited to formally meet you and talk to some of our fans today.
What was that huddle like or locker room after the shot, Jamarcus Lawrence shot? First, take me in the huddle previous to that possession and getting that look for Jamarcus Lawrence, and then after the celebration, all of it.
Yeah, I think just in general, our guys were locked in going to that game. You know, it's an emotional week on a lot of levels, but yet we prepared well. We talked about what it was going to look like. We have some players that have played in that building, some that it was new for. And just in general, you know, just wanted to control what we could control. Knew there was going to be some runs throughout the game and didn't want to get lost, whether it was with the crowd, whether it was the opponent. And just wanted to stay in the moment. And I thought, obviously, we started the game very well. Obviously, a good team like that, Illinois, is going to punch back and make their run. And they had a big run going into halftime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there wasn't panic in the locker room at halftime. There wasn't panic the first 4 minutes of the second half. I thought we got the game back settled. And to your point, you know, talking about the end of the game, you know, I just thought our mindset was good coming in out of every huddle. And to the guys' credit, they executed. I mean, hats off, obviously, to Jamarcus for knocking down the shot, but just the whole sequence of them hitting a three, coming back and scoring, them hitting another three, and just having the poise to make the final play on that stage just says a lot about our team and its character.
Yeah, poise is a really good word. What was it, a 13-0 run, I think, going into half that tied things up? You guys had gotten out to, you know, a pretty big lead on the road in the Big Ten. That gets squashed, so you have to reset a little bit at half. Take me in the locker room at half when you guys are saying, look, you know, it's tie game, starting 0-0, it's a brand-new game. How do you approach that after Illinois goes into the half pretty hot?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, we really break down each game possession by possession and each four-minute game by four-minute game. You know, each media timeout is essentially going to be a four-minute game. So from there, you've got 10 four-minute games, and that's how we practice, that's how we prepare, and we have goals for those four-minute games. And hitting off of what you were saying, you know, the first two four-minute games of the first half, you know, we really controlled the game and we controlled the tempo. And to your point, they got loose on some offensive rebounds and some things that they do really well. And I mean, that's fifth-ranked offensive team in the country, obviously a top 15 team, and had a ton of quad one games already. So we knew we were up for a big task, and there was going to be some runs. And again, I thought mindset was good at halftime. You know, we've been in situations where we've come out of halftime well, and some that we haven't come out as well. And I thought the starters did a nice job of getting the game back on track in that first four-minute game. And then, like I said, just kind of took it one four-minute game at a time and punch, counter punch. That's kind of life on the road, especially in the Big Ten. And, you know, night in and night out, you're facing good teams. So you better be ready to go. And if you get in your feelings, it can get ugly. So I give our guys a lot of credit. The talk was good. The leaders stepped up, and we were able to execute.
You never know who's going to be hot going into a game. And Price, boy, he was hot in the first half. You see everything go down from your vantage point on the bench to see him locked in the way that he does. Finishes up with a career high, 32 points. I believe 26 of that was before half. He was 10 of 13, 6 of 8 in the first half from three. Just to see his ability to get a shot off, find his way off screens to get open. What did you see from Price in what was just a remarkable first half?
The thing I'd say in general is, especially from a defensive perspective, is, you know, when we put this team together, especially, and we saw them for the first time in June, you know, it's easy to tell that we were going to be hard to guard, and that it wasn't necessarily just all eggs were in one basket. We had multiple guys, and we've seen it. Price obviously had it rolling in the first half. You know, Rinks had big moments. Jamarcus. On down the list, you just keep going. Sam has had his moments. Obviously, we took a hit with Connor, and I know how hard he can be to shut off. So Braden Frager has had his moments. Like, there's a lot of weapons, and we addressed some things in this offseason with our recruiting, and we wanted a bunch of guys that could shoot, pass, and dribble. And when you have that and you have unselfish players like we do and high-character guys, then that allows you to essentially find the hot hand, ride the hot hand, but also know that, you know, if adjustments are made, that we can make adjustments as well and start to move to other guys as well. I mean, I think you look at even Jared Garcia down the stretch too, stepping up and making some critical plays down the stretch. You know, we've got some weapons out there offensively, and we continue to play the right way, and we'll be hard to guard.
And, I mean, for those that don't know, you work a lot with the defensive side, and the way this team is defended hard. I've talked to Fred a bunch, and he mentions the number of deflections is one big thing that you guys go back and look at after every single game, the activity of getting into passing lanes, just the overall energy and effort, coach, on the defensive side. I would assume you're pretty happy with what you've seen.
Yeah, life as a defensive coach, you're never happy.
I know that. I knew that was going to be the answer.
there's a human nature. There's you're always fighting the urge to be complacent in today's day and age. I think that's in general. So, but to answer your question or to talk about it, I mean, we have things that we can do very well defensively, and then there were things that we're going to have limitations. And I think each team, each group is that way. I mean, we have a defensive philosophy that we've had the last few years. The personnel can change from year to year. So the system might look a little different from year to year, but the overall philosophy is going to be the same. And we've got guys with good character, good IQ. When we're connected, when we're active, we can be, the sky's the limit. But anytime, you know, one piece is not in aligned or those standards aren't met, you know, that puts everything at jeopardy. So I think that's, you know, part of our vision, part of our goal is to make sure that we're playing to the standard each and every possession, each and every practice, and then from there, let the doors open from there.
What is that philosophy tend to look like for you? What when you pop on that tape, what do you need to see from your group defensively?
Yeah, this group specifically, and we've talked a lot about it. You know, I just in general, I love I love teaching these guys. I love working with these guys, and I love getting in the film room with these guys. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's a lot of noise in general in a lot of these kids' lives. So the ability to be able to teach, to be able to connect, to be able to correct on the practice floor in a film room is gold, I think, for these kids. And especially in today's, you know, portal era where time is limited. And that's okay. We embrace it. We know that. And we started with this group, like we said, in June. And, you know, the things that we talk a lot about, we got to be scrappy. We got to be disciplined, and we got to be determined. We're not going to be the most athletic group. We don't have a bunch of shot blockers, things like that as an example. But if we do those three things and control what we can control and function as a unit, we can perform against some really, really high-octane offenses we're going to see. And but at the end of the day, we have to continue to grow and continue to get better. It's a whole thing. If we want to stay where we're at, you know, you're going to get passed. And I think the big thing with this group, and we talked about it as a group as well, you know, we didn't sign up for a 5 or 10K. We signed up for a marathon. And obviously to this point, we've played 11 games and with two exhibitions, had 111 practices. We have 50 to go, and we'll see where this thing goes from here. But I know one thing, we're going to push them. We're going to correct them. We're going to teach them. And we got a group that has done a nice job of taking hard coaching and graduating from some mistakes that they've had early, and we'll see where we continue to grow from there.
We did have a question on the text line, and Coach, I don't want you to answer this because I don't want you to get in trouble, but I just want to reference Pat from Kearney. He said, ask Coach if he thinks the officials were one-sided on Saturday. So I'm not going to have you answer that question. I'm just going to acknowledge that Pat had put that in the chat. Pat, we appreciate you reaching out to the show. I know if you're on Twitter, you hear all sorts of opinions on officiating. But this last three-game stretch, Coach Hoiberg has said, this is a monster. This is a gauntlet. Creighton, Wisconsin, Illinois. You played, you know, you look at it in a season in totality, it's 11 different games, and not just these three games. But these three specifically, considering the opponents that you played and even some of the tough opponents you played in Kansas City, what has clicked, you think, specifically over these last three games where you beat a very good Creighton team by 21, a good Wisconsin program by 30 points? What is different about this team in this stretch?
Well, I'd like to say nothing, to be honest with you. We've tried to prepare these guys for moments, for stretches like this. And, you know, if we prepare to be the best version of ourselves day in and day out, then it really shouldn't matter who we're playing, where we're playing them, and when we're playing them. And I still, Coach speak cliche-ish, believe in controlling the things you can control. And if we have the proper mindset every day in practice and attack each and every day with the right mindset, then whatever perceived adversity is thrown at us, we'll be ready to hopefully withstand and be the best version of ourselves. And I think if we keep hitting on these guys of being the best version of themselves, not get caught up in the noise and get caught up in mm-hmm. everything that's outside the lines, then we have a much better chance of performing within the lines.
Yeah, I think it's really, and it's a hard, delicate balance, right? Because this program is, well, it's off to its best start in program history. You have the highest AP ranking since the early 90s. Look at me. I mean, I'm providing the rat poison here. That's what Nick Saban always calls it. But every single day, you have to remind these guys that, look, we're only a small chunk of the season, and the season doesn't get defined by what you did by December 15th. Like, that constant message, you almost have to do it ad nauseum, right? Just keep drilling it to them that, yeah, we're 11-0, we're doing great things, we're 15th in the country, but this is not where it stops.
Yeah, and I think that's why, again, that was the message today, is, again, we didn't sign up for a 5K and a 10K. Like, it's like, if we go for a record time right now and we signed up for a marathon, then we didn't finish the marathon. So, again, I it's good. It's good for the fans. It's good for the program. It's good for the buzz and all that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I think that's if we continue to kind of cut through the fog of what's good or what's bad, you know, if you do hit a rough stretch, then that way you're not riding as much of the momentum of the season, whether it's good or bad, and just put one foot in front of the other. Stay laser focused on being the best version of ourselves tomorrow in practice, and then attack the next day from there. I mean, that's just you talked about poison. You know, I mean, one of the things we talked about after the Wisconsin game is, you know, held up a phone in front of the guys and said, "What is this?" And it was a phone, but I said, "No, this is poison." And right now it is poison. Mm-hmm. Other than obviously the people you're talking to, your family and stuff like that. And I get that and understand that. So, I mean, we got young, influential minds. I mean, we got good kids. We have good character. We have good maturity in our locker room. But to your point, like, we talk a lot about not getting too high or too low. So I think part of that is continuing to teach and grow and continuing to attack each and every day and see what doors open from there.
Chatting with Nate Lenzer, assistant coach of the Nebraska basketball Cornhuskers. And obviously, Coach, you look at Rink Mast and what he's done. You've coached some pros, right? So you've been around some really, really good players. Where does he stand out in his poise, his professionalism, the way he slows down the game? He's able to do so much. He's just a matchup nightmare. When you talk about his game, what he's like to coach, what stands out there?
You know, the thing that impresses me about Rink, especially, I mean, I've coached in pros, so, like, I've seen Pau Gasol work and Jimmy mm-hmm. Butler work and Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade, so Hall of Famers, so the best of the best, but yet I've also seen a lot of very good college players, too, go about their craft, and at the end of the day, the thing that even since day one, is that Rink's got just such a maturity about him. And if he's in an individual workout, he's locked in and he's given max effort. And his attention to detail is always spot on. He's not a wind-up guy. He's a guy that you have to honestly sometimes, you know, make sure he doesn't – you have to wind him down to protect him from himself. So for him – to be out of basketball for 15 months mm-hmm. and for him as a, you know, how he's had to evolve, you know, he can't put everything he wants to into the fine tuning things of his workouts. You know, he's still got to make the main thing. And when it comes to games, but yet still stay sharp with all his things, but you can reason with him, you can talk with him, you can explain it to him. And he's one of the smartest guys that I've ever coached. He cares. He's been in good programs. He knows what winning looks like. And we're just very fortunate to have him in our program.
He gets better as the game goes along. Case in point, the Illinois game had 12 after half and 5 of 8 from the floor, hit a couple threes. So he was really, really big down the stretch in the win against Illinois. Fans, contact 811 2 days before you dig to protect your underground utilities and yourself. It's free. It's easy. It's the law. The Nebraska Men's Basketball Coaches Show is sponsored by Union Bank and Trust, where people don't have your money has people. Have another segment. We'll have a couple more segments here with Coach Lenzer. I'll have a special guest as well. Final segment, Cale Jacobson will join the show. So plenty to do, plenty to talk about. The Nebraska Cornhuskers off to an 11-0 start, 15th ranking in the new AP poll coming out. So a lot to dive into with Coach. More right after this. The Huskers Radio Network Broadcast Center is sponsored by Acres Midwest John Deere Dealers, supplying the equipment and service to advance agriculture and much more. Acres solutions for every field. Back with Nate Lenzer, who is assistant coach for the Nebraska Cornhuskers basketball team, off to a tremendous unbeaten start, won 15 in a row, longest win streak in the country dating back to last year. But again, we're not going to continue to bring up all that rat poison here with Coach before he gets angry at me. But we're talking some defense, talking some players who went through Rink Mast and sort of his journey going through the knee injury. And, you know, I watch this team play and see a guy like Sam Hoiberg, right? It's what's unique about this team and why it's fun to dream is because it's led by veterans. And it's hard to do that now in college basketball with guys moving in and out that don't stay with a program for more than 1 year. But it's a group that's a good core. It's an older core. And you look at a guy like Sam Hoiberg, his energy, his effort helps you on the defensive end. How does Sam, is he sort of the glue that binds a lot of what you guys have together?
Yeah, I just think, I mean, like all these players, kids, you know, like people get excited, 11-0, all that. Like Sam Hoiberg was, when I first met him, a second grader with his brother, and I was running camps for coach at Iowa State. Mm-hmm. And we had to make sure Sam and Charlie didn't go up against each other in camp because it was going to be a blow up. So so that you go from that, and then our time in Chicago when he's growing up, and then I didn't really see Sam play in high school because I was still in Chicago, so I didn't see him his high school basketball here. And my first year here was Sam's first year. And when I rejoined coach, he said, you know, Sam's going to be one of our walk-ons. So, and he, that first year, had a long ways to go. I mean, and he was he redshirted that year. He was on the scout team. I had a lot of work with the scout team that year. It was going to take some work and it was going to take some time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, he had the right name and he got the right opportunity. But the thing that I liked about Sam and I coached him very, very hard on that scout team too, is he, and he probably thinks he's been coached harder than others, but he's done a great job of taking hard coaching and getting better, and he's earned a spot. Like at the end of the day, I tell all these guys, like, because I've been in the NBA and the G League, and guys get favors and da 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 da. Well, at the end of the day, we all need some sort of favor and we need some sort of opportunity at the end. But it's up to you to decide and make the most of the opportunity. And I think Sam epitomizes just what it means to get an opportunity, take advantage of the opportunity, earn the opportunity. And, you know, after that first year, we revamped his first year was my first year, and we revamped a lot of things from his redshirt year to his freshman year. We revamped how we recruited, who we coached, to how we did things defensively and the whole structure. And it started going into his redshirt freshman year with how we did some things defensively that were much different. And to his credit, he bought in like crazy to the new defense. And you know, you think of Sam Hoiberg, Fred Hoiberg's son, you're going to think shooter. But to his credit, he got on the floor because of his grit, because of his toughness, because of his defensive abilities, and didn't start the year in the rotation, had some injuries. And then when he got his opportunities at the end of that freshman year, he capitalized on it. And he's grown from year to year, each part of his game. And to your point, like, we got a lot of great examples, but like, you know, going from the black team, which is our scout team, and just taking a different path. Like I always say this, and it's the same thing, like you're either an asset or a liability. And he's proven to play winning basketball, and if you play winning basketball, it doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, what your name is, what it isn't. And because this is a competitive sport, and we're always looking for guys that impact winning, and Sam impacts winning.
Yeah, it's just his decision-making on the floor is next level. And I want to get to your journey. We were talking a little bit about it during the break, but I think it's incredibly unique. You've been the assistant at the college ranks. You've been in the NBA. You've been a video coordinator in the NBA. You've been a G League head coach with this Windy City Bulls. You've seen it from all different angles. Now, college, more than ever, it's become sort of like the pros with you have a yearly free agency. But there's still differences between college and the pros. Your experiences, how has it maybe helped you coaching in this climate of college basketball? It's probably prepared you to make it feel like it's old hat the way college is run now.
Yeah, I think, you know, philosophically, to me, my mom was a teacher. I was a PE teacher back in the day, alternative school teacher. Like, coaching is teaching, and it's trying to make an impact. And I think what's changed maybe in college is that, you know, the days of having 4 or 5 years with a player has changed, obviously. But my time in professional basketball, really, I think helped me to understand that, you know, you might have a 10-day contract, you might have a summer league guy, you might have a pre-draft workout with a guy, you might have a full year. But if you pour into the human, if you pour into the person and give them everything you have, then it's ultimately about helping them be the best version of themselves. And that's been my philosophy at the end of the day, too. I'm very competitive. I love sports in general. I like winning. I hate to lose. But I also enjoy embracing tough, embracing adversity, and trying to help humans get better in whatever that looks like. So I think if you have that mindset, then maybe the days of what things look like in college athletics don't become as important. It's like, okay, we're the people in front of us, who's a part of our program, who's decided, you know, ultimately to choose us and choose our program, and how do we make the best impact we can while they're here. And that might be 1 year, that might be 2 years, that might be 9 months, whatever it is. But I think if we just go with that mindset, then it's a little easier. I think, to your point too, I mean, you know, kids are getting paid, they're getting different situations from the NIL and the revenue sharing and all that. Like, your ego tends to get checked at the door when you're in an NBA locker room, and, you know, guys are making 20 and 30 million, but you still have a job to do. You still have a purpose to do, whether it's a scouting report you're telling them, whether it's working on an individual skill or something like that. So I think that time in the NBA helped me to, you know, not get caught up in, okay, this guy's making 20 million and I'm not. If your heart's in the right place and you're coming from the right place and you can ultimately help the person, they're going to listen. And if you're about the wrong things, then they're not. And it just becomes as simple as that. And that's just how I've tried to attack whoever's decided to join our program.
Now, it's also worth mentioning, too, you were an elite athlete yourself, played baseball at Iowa State. Were a four-sport athlete in high school, so baseball, basketball, football. You had golf in there. I had this note, and I want to confirm it. Fell two tackles shy of the school's single-season tackles record behind Trev Alberts. Is that true? Former AD here in Nebraska?
That is true, and elite. I appreciate you saying that.
Yes.
Maybe my kids are listening right now.
Elite.
I don't know if elite's the right word, but yeah. And obviously Trev's had his impact here in the football program and things like that. So yeah, but I went to the same high school as Trev, and he graduated with my older brother. So I just, you know, like, for me growing up, my mom, my dad, they just said, you got to be well-rounded. So I did my academics, took those seriously, did band, I did orchestra.
Really?
But the things that probably I was the most passionate about were obviously sports. And I always just used to say that my favorite sport was whatever season it was. And, you know, I've always loved competing. I've always loved getting better. I had ups and downs in every sport that I was in. But the personal gratification of trying to display stereotypes, but then also just the moments you have in a locker room and with teams and celebrating and trying to come together on victory is just something that at an early age I found passionate. So that was, you know, when that career, whatever that ended, I just knew that probably being in coaching or something like that would make sense for me.
What was the instrument that you played in band, orchestra? So I always played the recorder. I feel like that was one we all played at one point in middle school. Everyone's shaking their heads back there because they've all played recorder at some point. It's like everybody was like born with a recorder. When you got in school, they handed one to you. What was your instrument?
The band is interesting. So I was a very late bloomer. So I was, you know, I was like 93 pounds my freshman year. And in junior high, you could pick an instrument. Of course, I picked the biggest instrument. So I had a tuba.
I love it.
For bands, so practice with a sousaphone and a chair in my living room, and it took up half of the living room. And then also, like, you know, my parents early, so I was, like, usually you didn't start orchestra until I think fifth or sixth grade, but for whatever reason, my mom got me into orchestra early. So I played the cello in first grade, and wore prosthetic a lot growing up, and so had to have the strings restrung and had the bow in my left arm instead of the right. So it was something, I don't know how or why we came up with that, but it was something that I did at a very early age. And again, my mom was, she did not have to wind me up at all when it came to sports, but she, to her credit, she always wanted me to be well-rounded, and I'm very appreciative for that because, you know, adversity comes in different ways, and, mm-hmm. and just being able to be well-rounded, I think, is a cool skill that I was able to be exposed to.
Absolutely. Woodhouse has been a trusted partner in your everyday since 1975. Shop for your next vehicle with the home team at Woodhouse and the official auto dealer of Nebraska Athletics. One more quick segment with Coach Lenzer. That's next here on the Nebraska Basketball Show. Welcome back to the Nebraska Basketball Show. Kyle Crooks and Coach Nate Lenzer talking Nebraska hoops. Have about 3 minutes left with Coach. We'll have a conversation with Cale Jacobson coming up in the final segment. But, Coach, I know we were talking during the break. Probably need 30 minutes to talk about the impact of Cale Jacobson. But your just overall thoughts of a guy that I know you love being a part of this program.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the big things we've talked about and shift and just – understanding being the best version of ourselves as a program. Respect 94 is a huge thing within our program, and understanding the length of the court is 94 feet, and if we play the right way, the game has a much better chance of rewarding ourselves, and understanding that it's a privilege, it's an honor to go out on that basketball court, represent this program, this state, that jersey that's going to be there, that's been there a long time, and it's going to move on. But Cale Jacobson is, you know, honestly one of the first people that I got to see in the first summer and recruit, and he's just the epitome of a team first, great human. Does not take a single day for granted. Loves Nebraska, loves his state, doesn't take a playoff, knows our system inside out, upside down, and is a great example of running your own race. One of the things I talked to him about, even in the spring, because we brought in some new players in the spring, and he didn't have really a whole lot of opportunities. He played his spring recruiting after his senior year because he missed the year before with an ACL injury and ended up getting a Holy Cross offer, I believe, and a North Dakota offer, and had some other good D2 programs. But we didn't promise him anything. We talked about an opportunity, and then after that it was going to be up to him to run his own race, and didn't know what that would look like. Coaches played freshmen, walk-ons, whoever, but at the end of the day, you get what you earn, and it took him a while to get his opportunity, and now that he's got his opportunity, it's been awesome to see the impact he's made on the court that our fans have seen, but deep down, anybody in our locker room knows the impact he's made on our program since the day he's been here.
Yeah, just part of the standard setter. You know, he's one of those guys. Coach, we appreciate you coming up. I know it's busy this time of year. You're going from scout to scout, but a great start, and you're a big reason for it, so we appreciate you coming up and talking some hoops.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Great to meet you. And as always, go Big Red.
Assistant Coach Nate Lenzer, appreciate him hopping in for the hour. We'll have Cale Jacobson with Jessica Cootie. We'll have that in the final segment next. The Huskers Radio Network Broadcast Center is sponsored by Acres, the Midwest premier John Deere dealer, supplying the equipment and service to advance agriculture and much more. Acres solutions for every field. The Huskers basketball team off to a perfect start. 15th in the country. Big reason why, you have role players like Cale Jacobson. Our very own Jessica Cootie had a chance to sit down with Cale earlier today.
First of all, when you're first learning Nate's system, what is that process like? Because I know a lot of guys come in and joke, and it's a little bit different, right? So what is it immediately when you are learning it that you have to know this is the most important thing?
I think, well, we have our most important guy is the MIG, and we don't give up on contested layups. That's what we talk about all the time. If you're giving up layups and threes, you're in trouble. And so our goal is to take away the paint. And you're the most important guy, like, don't mess that spot up, because you're going to be the most yelled at guy if you continue to do that. And so I just think it's a different way, and it confuses people. the way that we guard, but when we're on point and our rotations are on point, obviously it looks smooth and it confuses and throws people off. So
what is it about the system that it works and it is confusing, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I think just the way that we rotate off the ball, like we talk about it all the time, we're not a one-on-one defense, we're a five-on-five defense. And it takes all five guys to be connected and to be on the same page. And when we're not, then that's when we get in trouble. And so to have the accountability amongst each other and with Coach Nate, like there's no plays off on the defensive end. And we have to continue to fly around and keep getting deflections. But it takes all five guys rather than just one.
Seems like communication is huge. Yep. I mean, and even Amy Williams said she walks by the gym and it is loud. The way you guys communicate, that's important too, right? Because you are moving and rotating so much, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of rotations. And when you get two to the ball in basketball, like you're playing 3-on-4 on the backside or 4-on-3. And so you have to be able to clean that up. And if you run two to the ball again, because nobody talks, now you're playing 3-on-1 and now you're really in trouble. So just everybody has to use their voice and has to be disciplined and continue to talk each other through the possession.
How about the deflections too? Because that's a big key. I mean, you get a lot of steals, but Coach Hoiberg always harps on the deflections too. What's the key in getting a bunch of deflections and getting your hands in the right places to kind of deflect the passes or whatever it might be?
Yeah, I think just to slow the basketball down, right? Like good offenses move the ball quick. And a deflection makes them think. It makes them obviously have to go catch it differently. And it's just harder to shoot a ball off a deflection. So the more deflections we can get, the more it takes teams out of rhythm. And then that allows us to get our defense set and to catch up and to then dictate kind of what the offense says rather than play catch up all the time.
So what makes one good at getting deflections?
You got to have your hands ready. And Coach Nate, he's always obviously with the one arm. He's like, you better have two hands up because I can't do it. So he jokes about that all the time. But yeah, we talk about palms and being in a stance. And if your hands are in your pockets on the defensive end, you don't really have a chance to get a deflection because the ball moves too fast. So just having your hands active and ready to go all the time, on and off the ball, like that's how we get deflections.
If someone had never met Nate Linzer and was asking you about him, how would you describe him?
Oh, geez. He's an energy bunny. he just never runs out of energy. He always says, like, I'm going to give you my best, so you better give me yours. And he holds us to that standard, right? Like there's not a day in the last 4 years that I've been here that Coach Nate has been tired or groggy at practice that he shows. I'm sure on the inside he feels it, but he's the same every single day. And that's something that you can appreciate as a player, right? You know what you're going to get from him, and you know the standard that he holds us to. And if you're not falling short, he'll let you know. But when you do, right, when we achieve our goal and when it looks good, he's going to be the first one to pat you on the back. So he just is the same. He's consistent, and that helps our group. Like, that's what we need from him.
I was talking to Jamarcus the other day after the win over Creighton. You guys got some guys banged up a little bit and some guys playing a lot of minutes. How are you guys going about making sure that you're taking care of yourself and the bodies before you go into the grind of the Big Ten Conference play?
Yeah, I mean, I think give a lot of credit to our training staff, our strength coach, Kurt and Andrew. They spend a lot of time just with what to do outside of practice, like when to tub, when to get to the weight room and do some extra just flush stuff with our bodies.
Yoga.
Yeah, when to do yoga. Yep, we do yoga all the time, it feels like. So they've done a great job of just making sure that we're doing the right things. And I also think when we have an older group, like there's guys that have been through the rigor of the Big Ten, and they know what it's going to be like. And so they know what they need to do and what works best for them. Rink has the longest post-practice routine I've ever seen, and he does it every single day, but it's working for him, right? And he shows up and he feels good the next day. So people just they've been doing it for a while, and they know kind of what it takes at this level.
Yeah, for sure. You a big yoga guy?
I need to be a big yoga guy. It's good for me.
Well, hey, it's finals week. What's this week look like for this team? I mean, you got to take care of your business in the classroom, right?
Yep, and I think a lot of guys try to get their stuff done kind of through this Monday through Wednesday. So then when prep for North Dakota comes out on Thursday is kind of when we'll start diving into their stuff for real. We can kind of really lock in on that game because this is our week off, but it's not. We can't take it as an off week. Like we need to be locked in all 5 days. Or 6 days now and prepare for North Dakota before this Christmas break. So that's what we talked about today was we're not looking ahead to Christmas. Our break starts on Sunday at 10 o'clock.
Good stuff with Jess and Kel Jacobson here on the Nebraska Basketball Show. Interesting story for Kel, local guy, Ashland, Nebraska, and gets a chance to be a part of this Husker program and really help build the culture and build this now to what it is. And, you know, we can mention it as rat poison, but it is what it is right now. And some of the stats that Seamus, the great sports information director for men's basketball, is getting a chance to dig up. But 11-0 program's best start in the program's entire history, 15th consecutive win going back to last year. That's the nation's longest active win streak. That continues. First win at Illinois since January 16th of 2016. First 2-0 start in conference play since the 16-17 season. You have the highest AP ranking since 1991. You have a net ranking of 12th. All that to say, there's still a lot of basketball left to be played, including a game on Sunday. That'll be a 7 p.m. Central tip, so that means we're on the air with Kent and Jeff at 6 local time against North Dakota, Tuesday, December 30th against New Hampshire, and it all leads up to Michigan State, a ranked team, most likely a top 10 team in town, right after New Year's Day. So after the bowl game, hopefully PBA can be really loud on that Friday night leading into the weekend. That'll be popping. Huskers and Michigan State Spartans, if it's anything like the last two environments, we're set. Nate Lenzer and Kel Jacobson, we appreciate them. Jessica Cootie joins me for Sports Nightly. Plenty to talk about. That's next.